session number 22077, reel 10.
Harold Morris Metcalf, reel 10. So you got to Michenar.
To Michenar.
Right, okay.
So,
and a lot of the regiment were there.
No.
No, sorry.
No, not many of the regiment were there. Only the sick and wounded.
Right. Okay.
What? I'll tell you this in a moment. We got to Michenar, went straight to the airport. It was absolute chaos. Honestly, it was terrible. And the chap in charge, he said, "Any of you got any pets you want to take with you?" And I cried because I left my dog behind. I could have taken it with me anyway. And lots of women were offering lots of money to the soldiers to marry them there. That's a fact. So they could get out. If they were soldiers' wives, they'd have got out. Right. Quite a few of them got out.
Native women.
Yeah. Well, Anglos, most of them were. It was chaotic. We were on the plane very quickly, and I think we were about the last plane that got away from Michenar anyway.
That was a British plane, wasn't it?
Yes. The Air Force flew us out.
Yeah.
My wife, incidentally, flew out from a place called Moulmein with our baby. They came out in Flying Fortress, just as it was, you know. They didn't care what they were on.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's another story. We were flown from Michenar to Assam, and we went to a place called Shillong. Shillong is near, I forgot the name of the place. It's the wettest place in the world, actually, and it rained terribly hard. And I do remember going up from the railway up this hill in a bus, and it started to rain, and the thunder, and the old chaps, they ran away. They thought they were going to be bombed. It really was quite, when I look back, it's funny, but it wasn't bloody funny at the time. I couldn't get out, I had a bad leg, but most of them, it was strange, it really was.
Because, of course, they've been bombed. I mean, there must have been a lot of people who were very, very shocked.
Exactly. I mean, this is one of the things that shook me rather more. I mean, I always thought I was a very reasonably level-headed sort of bloke, but I mean, when I woke up in hospital, I was shattered, I'm not joking. And apart from that, you're thinking about where's your wife and your kids. And I woke up in hospital. When they converted a school at Shillong into a hospital. In fact, the what would we call them there? He wouldn't be the governor, but the representative of Britain. His two daughters came down and helped. They took us back to Government House, and I had a bath down there with Jack Betterton, my captain. Jack Betterton was in the next bed to me, and Sammy Clayton was in the same ward, my RSM from Rangoon. And Jack Betterton had been captured by the Japanese, put against a tree and bayonet practiced on.
Oh, no.
Something happened, and he was able to get out of his bonds, and he swam the river, and they reckon if he hadn't swam the river, he would have died because the wounds he had. They picked him up on a boat, and that was it. And that's where I met Jack.
So he'd been bayoneted
quite badly, actually. They hadn't touched any vital points because that was the way they played with these people, I believe. But poor old Jack, he was in a pretty bad state when I saw him. He was our football team captain as well, you see. And Sammy Clayton was over there as well. He'd had a terrible bout with dysentery. He was so thin, I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? It really had sapped him badly. But that was...
Did they both survive?
Oh, yes. In fact, Sammy came with me later on up to the hills where my wife was. In fact, when Jack Betterton was in the river, one of my fellows by the name of Jeff Biggs, quartermaster. Jeff happened to be going up in a launch and saw him and picked him up and got him out. He got an MM for something else, Jeff, actually. He had a brother we lost there. He had stab wounds, yes. I remember the nurses bathing us. These two girls from the governor's was smashing. Anyway,
So how many of the Gloucesters were left? I mean, not you know, had tremendous losses.
I think when they came out eventually, there were only 90 men. I didn't see the regiment again for quite a long time, actually. How can I put this now? Where was I?
You were in the hospital and then the governor's...
We were flown out to Michener to Assam. And then the Methodist minister found out where our families were. And
so
we were then able to correspond, and they were sent.
You didn't know your family was.
No, we didn't know what had happened to them at all. There was no. This was the worst thing about everything. You got no news, and then they were sent to a hill station at Clifden, Moray, the foothills of the Himalayas, a summer rest camp. Two pieces of stick and a bit of coal. You know, there was nothing there. Oh, that's another story, of course, I knew nothing about till later. But
so really, I mean, it sounds as though the evacuation of Rangoon and everything that followed on from that was complete chaos.
Chaos.
I mean, could they not have prepared for it?
I hate to say this, but when Singapore fell, our family should have been sent home. I got no axe to grind about it. I think... you know, we were all very upset about the whole business, especially when we knew they were coming up the ruddy Malaya Straits and so on. So I have a feeling, although the regiment was in good form, the spirits were very low when we started the war in Burma.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Why was that particular?
Well, because we thought we'd been let down by the government. We thought
being
that...
left out there?
Yeah. Two bloody regiments... That's all we had, the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry and the Gloucester Regiment were the fighting troops, that's all there were. And I mean, the Japanese had a couple of armies coming down, you know, I mean, I'm not being funny about it, but we would have thought that the government might have done a bit more. That's why they call it the Forgotten Army, I think. My mother was very upset when I came home eventually, but that's another story, isn't it? But that's the way it was, and I think it taken the heart quite a bit out of our regiment. They stuck together, all the lads, mind, but I stayed in hospital for a while.
In Assam, was that?
Yes. And the minister, we corresponded afterwards. He was a very, very nice man. And I went to church a couple of times while I was there. From the hospital, we went to the church. And... then we were told we were going to our families. And we came down from Kohima and got the train at Railhead at Manipur Road. And we came to Calcutta. Who was on the train with us? General Alexander and his staff. Came round and had a chat. He was very nice. Came round and talked to all the men. Came round and chat to all the chaps. Yeah, I hadn't seen him before. Bill Slim was my boss. We looked after very well. We got to Calcutta, and we had to go from one side, Chowringhee, to another place to get the train. And when I got there, I couldn't get a seat on the train. So I wasn't very pleased. The RTO said, well, it's not our fault, really. We didn't expect you fellas in from Burma. So, so there were some Yankee airmen, and they said, where are you going, Buster? And I told him. He said, oh, we're going that way. You can come in our coach. Yeah? Yes. Had a bath there. We had attendants gave me a bath on the station. And they were going. They said, you can come in with us. We got plenty of room. I went with them. They had pictures of themselves with Chiang Kai-shek. They were the first people who'd gone over and bombed. Yes? They all just showed their medals that they'd had from the Chinese and all this business. Ever so nice fellows they were. And we had troubles with a DARS, they called them, I think, DARS, dacoits they were, you know, people who'd come and rob. And they used to rob the trains, so there was a bit of trouble on the way, and they stuffed me a .45 revolver and said, you stay here, Buster, and they went up. There was firing, but we were never stopped. But I think they because they were there, that it stopped the thing altogether. Well, when we got to Delhi, these chaps got off. And I was on my own. In the all the food was there. I had all the food as well. Lovely. Oh, they fed me wonderfully well. And I actually had a coach all to myself right till we got to Rawalpindi. Now, I got out at Rawalpindi, and my leg was still pretty bad. I had a stick as well. Left arm in a sling. And I suddenly shouted, I heard a voice say, Mick! And I looked round, and there's my band sergeant bloke. Yeah, Nubby. Henry Ford. Henry Ford. His name wasn't Henry, but of course he was called Henry Ford. He played the euphonium in the band. And he was still hobbling. And I said, what happened? He said, oh, I got my bloody feet burnt like the colonel, and I couldn't walk. And I said, what? He said, I've been on this train all the time, ever so cold. I said, I wish I'd known how to coach all to myself in Delhi. But the point was, we had to go up this hill where Julia was to get to the camp. And we got on the bus and up the hill we went. Then we had to get off the bus to get onto two donkeys to go up the Khud. Well, we must have looked wonderful, like Ichabod Crane, I should think. Legs over the side of these things. Oh, it was hilarious until we got to the camp. It was lovely. It was a lovely reunion. We had a lovely time there. Anyway, we stayed. We on the mules and donkeys. And we had our bush hats on as well. We must have looked pretty good. Conquering heroes, I don't think. There was a peculiar incident when I arrived there.
And this is arriving at? Give me the name of the station again.
Cliffden. Cliffden. Cliffden, Murray. That's in the Murray Hills.
Right. And do you know what sort of date you got there? That might be in what year?
It was now what? 42, wasn't it? 42. January, February, March, April, May. May, would it be May or probably in May, April, March, April, May? Yes, we've been in action for about 3 months.
So this is May 42.
About that time, I would think.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, Mayish. I can't remember for sure, but it must be May or June.
Yeah.
And when I got there, we met the families, which was quite upsetting because some of their husbands had died. Had been killed and they didn't know, and we were not allowed to tell them.
Oh no.
You know? And whilst we were in Rangoon, we had a draft of families came out before the war started, and I had not long been made drum major, and the colonel's wife, whom I knew pretty well as I told you, she said, would you look after these ladies, drummy, at the dance? And I went down and I sat with these women. And we chatted and chatted and chatted. But one of the ladies said to me, you're not Mick, are you? You're Harold. You're Harold Metcalf, aren't you? And I said, who are you? And she told me who she was. And she used to live, there was my street, then Water Street, which backed onto each other. She lived behind me. Yeah, and we went to church together. And, of course, she'd married one of our sergeant majors, and I didn't know then. But when we got to Murray, we went to the dance, and that's when it all came out. Of course, the women thought, oh, my God, this is it, you know. This is how things happen all the time.
Yeah.
So we stayed. I went with Julie to the hospital daily on a horse. And we had a nice time, about 6 weeks. And then I went back to Lucknow, where the rest of the regiment, what was left, was forming up. And we went there. The rest of the men, there were other men, but they were actually at Kohima at the time, yes? Mm-hmm. And we were going back to Kohima. I said to my daughter, you know what all about Kohima, that's another story. We were in barracks there. It was a lovely little barracks, Kohima, very nice place. And then we went from the barracks into the Khud for no reason, just to get used to jungle bits again, you know. And we used to have battle training. TOOTS, tactical exercises without troops, as we called them, and we had to fire our mortars properly then. When we had the mortar section, I hardly knew any of these blokes, but they were good mortarmen, wherever they came from. They only had two from my own regiment. Nobby Hall was one. And the exercises we had at the time, we used to use live rounds as well. It was battle practice proper. Never lost anybody, fortunately. But there was something I wanted to tell you there. When I went back to Kohima, we went to Manipur Road. That was the railhead to go up the hill to Manipur, to Kohima. And it rained and it rained and it rained. It poured. Woke up in the morning with my bed floating, charpoys. We had wooden charpoys, and they were all floating. It was terrible. I had never had malaria in my life. A lot of mozzies there were, and we didn't have any mosquito net. Anyway, I went to it was 4 days before we could get up the hill, because the road had collapsed on the... It was quite frightening, incidentally, going up there in the truck. Anyway, we went... I'm trying to think what happened. When we got to the regiment, they were in... I forget the name of the regiment. An Indian regiment used to have the barracks, but we were in the barracks there then, in Kohima, long before the battle ever took place, this is. And I went up. I said, all the regiment had had malaria, except two of us in the band. And I go and prayed that morning, first morning, and Pooper Biggs was the RSM then, and I'm standing at the back with the other sergeants, and he said, I'm looking and I can see Kanchenjunga, this wonderful mountain of the Himalayas, all pink in the morning, first thing. And he said, slope arms, and I couldn't move. I couldn't move my arm. And suddenly I wake up again in hospital. I had malaria. There was malignant type and bacterial type, and whatever it was, I had the worst type, apparently. I don't remember very much about the hospital, except I woke up and we had a sergeant called Hoddinott. He was the order room sergeant. He was a wonderful chap, very well educated, but he couldn't go on parade because he had an impediment in his speech. Poor old Hoddinott used to go, how are you, Mick? And you're not going to believe this. The medical officer, he had an impediment in his speech as well. When I woke up, this is what I heard. How do you think he's going to get? And the officer saying, no. He had cleft. Well, if I'd been well enough, I could have laughed my head off, but I've never forgotten it. You know, these two, when I told them about it later. Anyway, I had a chum, the two chaps who really looked after me and saved my life, I suppose, was Nobby Hall, the band sergeant, and the lad who used to live in the road down here. His brother was in the band with me. Anyway, Nobby Hall and his name's gone out of my head, and Les Shepherd. They got ice every day and bathed me and kept me, and I got well, but I lost an awful lot of weight, and I was pretty weak. I was feeling pretty awful. And I didn't play any sport for a while because I wasn't able to. And when I got a bit fit, I played a football match, hurt my ankle badly. It was like that. And they were going to Imphal. And the colonel said, well, you better take the advance party, Metcalf. He said, you're in the truck. You can't march there because the regiment marched down there from Kohima. And so I went down and we arranged all the Basham. We got the medical corps. We used to help out putting kerosene on lake things so that it stopped the mosquitoes from breeding, that sort of thing. Till the regiment came down, you know, we had everything prepared, bashos done, and we had no tents, we all made bashos. And we stayed there, and we trained quite rigidly, and I went twice back into Imphal. We were then 125 miles down the Tidim Road on the way back into Burma. And it was a picnic. Can I say this quite frankly? Every day we had ration drops. Every day we had letter drops, you know. It wasn't like coming out where everybody had forgotten you. Going back in wasn't a picnic exactly, but compared with coming out, it really was. We got drops every day. And if there was anything special, it was done, you know, through the order room. And I went, Vic Imrie, he'd been a sergeant with me. He was now a captain attached to the military police. And he came down to where we were from Imphal, and he saw my colonel, and he asked me if I'd go and sing to the troops at Imphal. And I was delighted, of course. I said, he said, don't worry, the Biza people are there. That was Burma Entertainment's people, who I just had a letter from, some Chinti ladies. And I went there on two occasions to sing. I had a smashing time. It was quite a nice little break for me. We weren't in war footing at the time, but we did intense training every day. So,
so you're still, can I just interrupt, with the 2nd Battalion or 1st Battalion?
1st Battalion. I'm sure with the 1st Regiment. Yeah, 1st Battalion. And
the 1st Gloucesters.
Quite a lot of new officers. Quite a lot of people we didn't know at all, but we were all soon regiment, they were all soon Gloucesters. They heard all about how we got the back badge at Alexander in 1801. They were told pretty well. But I didn't meet many others apart from my section, you see, at that time, Mortar Platoon. And we had one incident with grenades. You know, that I expect you know about grenades, but they have a handle on them. As soon as you release it, you throw the damn thing. And according to whether it's 6 or 8 seconds, it goes off. And one bloke, he let it go one day while we were all in a group, and a bloke kicked it into a slit trench. Nobody got injured, fortunately, but there was hell to play about it, you know. But we used to have to do this thing every day. We'd practice with these things. And we didn't know how soon the war was going to come to us there. And we played cards quite a lot. They used to come to my basher. And
what games of cards did you play?
Pontoon.
For money?
Yes. Not much. But I was about, this particular night, I'd had a very good run of pontoon with my chum, and I had about 100 rupees, 10 pounds or something like that. I'd won. And I'd won a few bit before. So I had a little bit of money. But at midnight, this particular night, an orderly came from the order room, and he said, Sergeant Metcalf, I said, yes. He said, you have to report the order room straight away with all your kit. I packed my kit bag up quickly, and I said, you know what's going on? He said, no, I don't really. Well, when I got there were 12 other blokes there. I said, you know what's happening, Mick? I said, no. And out come the colonel. He said, you chaps are very lucky. You're all going home. You're going to be repatriated. We've been out 13 years then, by the way. We should have gone home a long time before, but who expected to get repatriated in a wartime, you know? It was such a surprise. It was. So what about our families? That's all right, you'll meet them all at Bombay. Oh, God, we couldn't believe our luck. And we got to the schoolie, he let us have his jeep. 30 of us on a jeep, I'm not joking. And we got to a river and we couldn't get across. And the Gurkhas made a collapsible out of two canvas mats. And bamboo, and they put us on there and ferried us across in the jeep. Yeah, the jeep went first, and they came back and took us all over. And we went down to Railhead and off to Bombay. It was quite a long trip, actually. And when we got to Bombay, our wives hadn't turned up. So six of us refused to go back to barracks. We were going to wait. And they turned up the following morning. My daughter was then about 9 months old then. And we had a lovely time. But on the dock, when we went down for loading, the RTO, the Royal Transport Officer, he said, do any of you know a drum major Metcalf? And I said, well, I used to be the drum major. I'm Sergeant Metcalf now. And he said, where's your wife? I said, well, she'll be coming soon. He said, she's my cousin. And he'd transferred. he'd gone over from Burma back to India. He was in the what they called the Rimi people at that time, mechanical engineers. So, it was wonderful. Now, we went from there on a ship called the Felix Russell. Unfortunately, Chili Creed, one of our sergeants, his baggage had been put on the Queen Mary. But he wasn't to go on the Queen Mary, which he didn't know, and his baggage went without him, poor old Chili. And we got on this ship, the Felix Russell, a French luxury liner. And it really was a luxury liner. It was wonderful. To the fourth day out when we ran into a cyclone, yes? And for 3 days, there was hell on the ship. We had a cargo of pig iron, by the way. And every time it went, had the ship been wider, it would probably have gone through. But the impetus wasn't enough. But everybody's generals and colonels who were coming home, who had all their kit smashed to pieces in the hold. We didn't have a lot, fortunately, but we had enough that we didn't get too damaged. We had a couple of kit bags in a suitcase. And we ran into the eye of the storm, and it was nothing. And then we ran out again, by which time the ship was listing very badly, and the whole of the starboard rail and all the lifeboats had gone. Really? Nothing left. We put into a place called Mauritius, where we stayed a week while it was tidied up. It was a lovely time. It was wonderful, really, after all, because it was quite a stress. Incidentally, because I was banned, I was medical, and I used to help out. Two ladies, pregnant, who shouldn't have been travelling, had their babies, and we had to hold the doctor up while he was... Oh, God, it was awful. I know.
What, in Mauritius, this was?
No, on the boat.
On the boat, yeah.
During the time.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It really was. Mauritius is beautiful now, I believe, but then it was quite a nice place. And we went ashore most days, and my daughter got in a tantrum one day, and my wife said, just leave her. She's lying on the floor screaming and kicking, and suddenly there's all these black feet round her, you know, all looking at her, and she got up and ran like hell. And we stayed there for a week, and then we went into Cape Town, where we stayed nearly a month. Well, it was really refitted. It wasn't a luxury liner anymore, by the way. It was a real troop ship when it was refitted. But we were allowed ashore every day, and my daughter, fortunately for us, developed measles. So she was kept in the sick bay, and we were able to go ashore on our own. Lots of chaps had married coloured Anglo-Indian girls, and they were warned that their wives ought not to go ashore in Cape Town. They were warned, but they went. They came back in tears. It was it was real apartheid in those days. And because they were coloured, of course, the husbands were up in arms, but there was nothing they could do about it. And I went to the Salvation Army with my wife, and I sang it in the open air there. I was a Salvationist, and I sang in the open air there. Major Waller and his wife, lovely people. They were very, very kind to the troops going through. And every day in the Cape, at 11 o'clock, there were 2 minutes silence. Every day.
Really?
Every day.
And that was for?
Just
for
World
War.
Right. Yeah. They an armistice there. And we went to Woolworths. And we got in there, and I had my back badge in my cap. I had a berry on. And this lady said, B.I. Bristol, B.I. buggery, you know. That's a phrase they used to use in Bristol at the time. And she was delighted. She came from Bristol. And she said, would you like to come to my place for tea? And we said we'd meet her, which we did. And when we got there, she was in a shocking state. From the time we'd seen her, she'd had a War Office cable to say her husband had been killed in the desert in with the 8th Army. You know, but we didn't really know what to do. But she was lovely. We went there every day. Yeah. And we really had a good time in the Cape. And then we picked up a small convoy.
Right. I'll stop you.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of Reel 10.